This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime stories brought to you by RelicRadio.com. We'll begin this week with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Barbara James Matter, their episode from June 29th, 1950. And it's Richard Diamond, Private Detective, and The Red Rose. That one first aired March 2nd, 1951.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment, Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
Frank Gaber at Monarch Live, Johnny. You free for about a week?
What's the deal?
The name is James, Mrs. Martin James. She disappeared May 25th. Her husband's a wealthy contractor in the Denver area.
What's the policy price?
$200,000.
She better not be dead.
According to the police, there's very little possibility that she's anything else.
The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum bring you Edmund O'Brien in another adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Here's a taste treat you can enjoy indoors, outdoors, at work, or at play. The cool, long-lasting mint flavor refreshes you. The smooth, steady chewing helps keep you fresh and alert. Adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Monarch Life Insurance Company, Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Mr. Frank Gaber. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during investigation of the Barbara James matter. Expense account item one, $73.87, transportation to Denver, Colorado. Expense account item two, $2.30, taxi fare from airport to police headquarters, where I spent a few minutes getting myself up to date. Detective Lieutenant Harrison locked his hands in back of his head, leaned back in his swivel chair, and filled me in on the meager facts.
And a swimming pool.
He must have loved her.
Well, he could afford it. And tennis courts, anything to hang on to her. See, Dollar, he's one of these silly old fools dreaming of a sparkling youth.
What about his wife?
She was 28. I got a picture of her here. Now, would somebody like this be interested in a 50-year-old baldy with a paunch?
For money?
She was, originally. But when she got all the money she wanted, she started cavorting. It's my guess that's what happened. Oh, what am I saying, my guess? That's what did happen. Up till the time she disappeared, anyhow.
Married long?
3 years. No children. Her first husband was under contract to one of the movie studios. He lost his contract, went to New York to starve a while, and found he had no wife when he got back to Hollywood.
Don't tell me. James met his wife in Reno.
Reno it was. He had just let go of something his own age. Wanted a little romance before he died. 6 weeks ago, he called up the department and said she was missing. In the last 6 weeks, he's aged 10 years. Looks like a very unhealthy 60 now.
Nothing from the travel bureaus, out-of-town hotels?
Nothing from railroad stations, bus depots, airports, auto rental services, other police stations in the U.S. and Canada, etc., etc., etc.
So?
After 6 weeks, murder.
Expense account item three, $1.50 taxi fare to the lush mansion of Mr. Martin James. On the way over, partly for pleasure, partly for business, I studied the glamour photo of the missing girl. She was standing beside a swimming pool in a bathing suit, smiling at whoever was taking the picture. She was quite a girl. The James Place was a colonial-style museum piece up on a hill overlooking the city. A pretty young thing in a nurse's uniform met me at the door, took my name, and disappeared behind two high oak doors. In a moment, she was back. She ushered me into Mr. Martin James. Mr. James looked very old. His legs were wrapped in a patch quilt. One hand clutched the collar of his bathrobe about his throat. The other hand held a glass of milk.
How do you do? Sit down, won't you? Oh, thank you, Martha. That'll be all. I know your suspicions, Mr. Dollar. My answer is no. I'm not at all sure she hasn't run off with a younger man.
But all the ticket officers show...
she'd use another name.
Very possibly.
You see, Mr. Dollar, Barbara married me for my money. I married her for her youth and her beauty. It was a decent enough arrangement until she became dissatisfied. Yes, I suppose I was a fool.
Then you think she left you?
If I ever allowed myself to really believe that, I wouldn't want to live. I can stand the news that she's ill, oh yes, or even that she's dead, but not that she's left me. And I sit here day after day telling myself that maybe, in a small way, she loved me.
And what do you think did happen to her?
I don't know, but she would have sent me some notification, postcard, anything. You know, there was a strain of sweetness in there. She found it very difficult to be unkind. Oh, she had a conscience, Mr. Dollar.
Tell me, how did you discover she was missing?
Well, I came home one night. She said she was going out. We had a quarrel. It was the only time I ever raised my voice to her. She stormed out of the house, didn't even take any of her things.
You know any of her close friends who've left town?
No, I don't. But, of course, I didn't know all of her close friends.
I suppose not. Well, Mr. James, can you suggest any of her friends that I might start with?
No, Mr. Dollar. Although, I suppose Bennett would be as good as any.
Who's Bennett?
Oh, he runs the Yellow Bird Cafe, a nightclub downtown. I always had the idea he was number one on the list.
The Yellow Bird Cafe. Well, thanks, Mr. James. If I hear anything new, I'll let you know.
Thank you, Mr. Dollar. Oh, one more thing.
Yes?
If you find her, and she did leave me, tell her she needn't come back.
Expense account item 3, 90 cents taxi fare to the Yellow Bird Cafe, a blue-lighted night spot. In a minute or two, I was seated opposite a slick-haired leading man in a dinner jacket. From the size of the bills on his desk, I'd say his wallet was pretty well-dressed, too.
Don't look at them too long. They'll burn your eyes out.
Must be awful to have to rake all that off the lawn every morning.
Oh, I just wanted to impress you. That's a whole week's take. Denver isn't what I call a good club town. My place in Frisco does much better. The only town worse than Denver for club trade is Cleveland. Cleveland pulls in the gutters at 6 p.m.
Well, I'll keep that in mind if I ever get the urge to open up a clip joint. I'm here about Barbara James.
It's funny how that name keeps cropping up.
I suppose it'll keep cropping up until somebody finds her. You have any ideas?
Sure, lots of ideas. She could have crossed against the light, fallen into the Great Divide, thumbed her way to Hungary.
You're a comedian.
Oh, now look, Dollar. I'll tell you what I told the lieutenant. I don't know anything about it. And if you insurance rubes had any brains, you'd check with the cops first before making fools out of yourself.
You saw quite a bit of it.
Saw, that's right, saw. That was a long time ago. Listen, guy, I got a book in my pocket with names of girls to make Barbara James look silly. Now, why should I take away an old man's child bride?
That's not the way I heard it.
All right, for laughs, sure, I used to take her out. She was lonely. She used to come in here and sit alone at a table. I had nothing else to do. We'd dance. I'd buy her a few drinks. That was it.
She gave you the brush, Bennett.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You don't like to be given the brush.
Anytime I can't hang on to a dame like Barbara.
She gave you the brush and you didn't like
it. All right! All right, Dollar, she gave me the brush. I took that girl and gave her a new life. She was stuck with that old guy up there on the hill. She poured out her heart to me. Told me how it was to live up there. Well, I listened to all that. Listened like I was interested. And she turned around and kicked me.
Who'd she run off with?
I should remember.
Your cooperation would be appreciated.
Oh, get out of here. I'm busy.
Thanks. You've been a big help.
I hope you find her. Dead.
Expense account item 4, $3 for two drinks, one for me, one for the young lady I dragged away from the dice table. Two drinks later, I was a lot better informed.
You know, if he catches me talking to you, I'll probably be fired.
If he catches you, you'll deserve it. I bet they were quite a team, this Bennett and Barbara.
Oh, she gave him the brush.
That's what everyone said.
You think she's dead?
I don't draw any conclusions without having the facts.
Bennett hates to be brushed.
So do I.
Bennett started this place on money he borrowed from James.
Now, that's a new thought.
Mm-hmm. Here's another. Barbara James's first husband is in town.
I didn't catch the name.
Fred Fogle.
Another leading man.
Another leading man.
Yeah, I think that's worth another drink.
Uh-oh. Here comes Bennett.
Say, where's this Fogle staying?
The Parkson. Goodbye now.
Well, I see you're pumping the help.
Oh, just browsing.
Browse elsewhere, huh?
Right. Well, it's been swell.
Wait a minute, Dollar. What did she tell you?
We discussed baseball.
Come on, sit down, Dollar.
Make up your mind.
All right, sit down.
Sure.
Look, Dollar, I don't know where Barbara James is, and for all I care, she's at the bottom of the ocean, but there are a few things that have nothing to do with this case, which I would hate to have circulated around.
Every man has personal matters.
I'm glad you recognize it. Now, come on, what did she tell you?
You didn't tell me Vogel was in town.
Is he?
What's he doing here?
How should I know?
All right, Bennett, forget it. But listen, this girl, this Dice girl, I don't go firing her or anything.
I appreciate your interest in her welfare, Dollar, but I keep her for all the things she doesn't say. Finish your drink, Dollar. Ice is melting.
I walked to the Parkson and asked the desk clerk for Mr. Fred Vogel. He was out. I waited an hour. At 3 a.m., he came in, slightly tipsy. He got his key and went upstairs. I followed in the elevator. When I got out on his floor, he tossed me a curious glance, but that was all. When he'd closed his door and I was on his side of it, he was even more puzzled.
You got the wrong room.
Uh-uh.
Oh, yes, yes, you have. You got the wrong room. Now, do you mind?
Are you Fred Vogel?
Yes, how did you know?
You were married to Barbara James?
That's right.
Well, come on. Sit down. Let's have a talk.
Now, look, I like to talk, but it's 1 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
Well, you see, it's even later than that. How about tomorrow?
No, I like to work at night. I'm with an insurance company. We're trying to locate your ex-wife.
I haven't seen her in 3 years. No, 3.5 years.
And what are you doing in town?
Just passing through from New York to Hollywood. I took the northern route. Beautiful. And I shunted off this way to see Barbara again. I pay my respects to her new husband.
Sounds too casual.
You know, I'm glad you dropped in. I was out all night sitting in some crummy bar and there was nobody to talk to. Well, do you like a drink?
No, thanks anyhow.
Well, you don't mind if I have one?
No, go right in.
You know, when she left me, what's the difference? Anyhow, when she left me, I was destitute. Shook my confidence in myself. I always knew she was too good for me, but I never knew how much too good for me she was until she left me. Shouldn't have gone to New York.
Why did you?
Make money. Sure, make money. Why else would anybody be fool enough to go to New York? When I came back, she was gone. She'd gone with this guy, this James.
Why did you come back, Fred?
Had to see her again. 2 months I've been in town. I'm almost broke. First 2 weeks, I didn't have nerve enough to go up to her place, and then she disappeared. Now I can't go until I find out where she is.
You've had a rough time.
That's right. It's just what I need. I need somebody to sympathize with me. That's what I need. Oh, man, I wish you'd have a drink with me.
All right, Fred. I'll have a drink. I went home at 5 and slept till 11. The only reason I woke up then was because somebody was ringing a telephone in my ears. Yeah, hello.
You sound like you're in the crest of a hangover.
Who's this?
Harrison.
Who?
I'm with the police department.
Oh, sure. Yeah, what's up, Harrison?
Did you know that Bennett was one of Barbara James' favorite people at one time?
Yeah.
Well, there's a girl named Dorothy, a Dice girl.
Yeah, very nice.
Dice, D-I-C-E, Dice girl.
Oh, yeah, Dice girl.
We found her this morning on the highway. 4 bullets too late.
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste. And the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you keep going at your best. So for real chewing enjoyment that's refreshing and long-lasting, always keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. Healthful, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum will make every day more enjoyable. And now with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we return you to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Well, this sure doesn't look like the apartment of a 26 girl.
And this isn't installment furniture either, Lieutenant.
Let's nose around in that closet.
What?
Imported brocade.
Yeah.
Well, my wife's been pestering me for something like this for 10 years.
Now, how would a girl like Dorothy rate all this?
For being lovely?
Or for being quiet?
It's possible. It's usually the former.
Yeah, that's true. Wait a second.
What are you doing?
Looking at this label. Martin Rifling, Denver. Now lead me to the classified.
Yeah, it's a very cute dollar. I wish I'd have thought of that.
Yeah, here's the yellow book. Thanks. Ah, let's see. Dresses, here we are. Now, Rifling. Right here. Martin Rifling, early 5687. There you are, Lieutenant. Make the call in the name of the law.
Yeah. 5687. I hope they still have the records. On the other hand, a customer like this, you... Hello, say this is Lieutenant Harrison, Police Department. Have you got the records on a Miss Dorothy Weller? No, all right, sure.
What's the deal?
Says I have to talk to the manager. Hello, say this is Lieutenant Harrison, Police Department. I'd like some information regarding a Miss Dorothy Weller. Yes, Weller. She had quite a substantial account with you, didn't she? $3,000. Wow. Look, who paid the bills? What? She did. Well, did she ever come in with anybody? I see. Yes, I see. All right, thank you. Nothing. She paid everything herself.
The bankroll wants to keep itself a secret.
Well, let's check on some of this other stuff.
Probably the same deal, Lieutenant. She was getting plenty from somewhere, and the gift was strictly anonymous.
Got any ideas?
Same one you got.
I'm going to mess around here for a while. You go on over to Bennett's and check.
I'll let you know if we're right, Lieutenant. And look, why don't you take some of that imported brocade back to your wife?
Huh? Don't be silly. Then I'd have to take her someplace expensive to show it off.
Expense account item 5, $1.30 taxi fare to the Yellowbird Cafe. It was 2 in the afternoon and the place was quiet as a mausoleum. I went to Bennett's office and tried the door. It opened. Bennett was in his chair, bent over the safe. As I closed the door, he bounced up.
Dollar. What do you want?
A little information. We came across some bills at a dress shop.
Yeah?
Yeah, $3,000. Guess whose name was on them.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's Dorothy Weller, that's who I'm talking about. $3,000.
Well, she must have come into some money.
And now she's dead, and you were the rich uncle.
I wouldn't spread those kind of rumors, Dollar.
You killed her, Bennett. You killed her because she was bleeding you to death.
Prove it.
I can, by your bank account. She was your favorite charity.
Get out of here.
How does it tie in with Barbara James, Bennett?
Get out, I said.
You don't really want me to get out of here. If I did, I'd go right to the police and you'd be arrested on suspicion of murder. Now, come on. I want the details.
All right. All right, Dollar. Barbara James never gave me the brush.
And how did Dorothy Weller fit in?
I sent her with a message to Barbara the night that we were going away. I sent her up there to tell her where to meet me.
The night Barbara was killed?
That's right. The night she was killed.
What happened up there?
I don't know.
Come on, Bennett.
I tell you, I don't know. She wouldn't tell me.
You paid her enough.
Well, not to give me information, to keep things to herself. If anybody ever found out that Barbara and I were going to run away together... So I spread the tale that she'd given me the brush months before.
You could be lying, Bennett.
Could be, but I'm not.
If you're not, it smells of double blackmail.
What do you mean?
Come on, you're not that stupid. Obviously, Dorothy was playing both ends against the murder. You were supplying cash to keep your name out of the Barbara James guest book, and somebody else was paying her to keep quiet about what happened that night.
Who would that be? James?
You hit it right on the head, Bennett. Expense account item 6, transportation to the Martin James place. I found old Mr. James out by the swimming pool, accumulating a wrinkled tan. He sent the nurse for something cool for me, and we settled down to conversation.
Are you calling me a liar?
All I know is something drastic happened the night Barbara James disappeared. Now, look, I don't prosecute anybody. I'm just an insurance man. My job is to find your wife, that's all.
Well, I've told you the truth.
I'm afraid not, Mr. James. Because it happened something like this. You came home. Barbara was packing. She was there with another girl, a girl named Dorothy Weller. She told you she was running away with Bennett. You had a quarrel.
Oh, it's the most
You've
ridiculous.
Been paying Dorothy Weller plenty to keep that quarrel to herself.
Why, that's sheer invention.
Investigation, Mr. James. Now, exactly what happened?
Oh, everything happened exactly as I told it to you.
Bennett tells a different story.
Then it'll have to be Bennett's word against mine.
It'll be more than that, Mr. James. Dorothy Weller is dead.
Huh?
Yes.
I see.
Now, what happened that night?
Well, we quarreled. Barbara said she was going away with Bennett. I didn't want her to go. She left anyhow. I paid Dorothy Weller a good deal of money, not to mention the quarrel to the police.
What happened to your wife, Mr. James?
I don't know.
She didn't run away with Bennett. What happened to her, Mr. James?
I don't know.
You killed her, didn't you?
No,
You told her you'd kill her before you'd let her go. Then she tried to go and you shot her.
Oh, no, that's a lie.
Well, Mr. James, it's only a matter of time. Don't admit anything now. You don't have to. The only witness is dead. But we'll find the body. Oh, thanks for the drink. Three weeks passed. Barbara James was still missing. We were stymied, no place to go. We searched every inch of the grounds on the James estate. We found nothing. The garbage disposal, nothing. The incinerator, nothing. Yet neither of us doubted that James had killed his wife. Sometimes he'd follow us around, his hands behind his back, a little smile on his face. I got to hate James. It was like losing at canasta night after night to the same guy. One day, I was standing in the patio, looking down into the blue water of the pool, when somebody tapped me on the shoulder.
Mind if we clean it?
Huh?
The pool.
Oh, well, you better ask Mr. James.
Oh, I thought you was going to use it or something.
No.
Well, we service the pool every 2 weeks, and unless somebody's using it, we go right to work, you know.
Well, go right to work, then.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, we built this pool, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've been building pools in around Denver for 25 years. My father was in business before that. This here's a beautiful job we did. We take real pride in this here pool.
Yeah, it's a nice pool, all right.
Oh, we got some beauties all around, but this here's our pride and joy. Solid gunite all the way through. Steel reinforcements, Lutwiler pump and motor. Best equipment you can buy. This thing set old Mr. James back a plenty, but you get what you pay for. Nobody builds a better pool than us for the money.
Is that so?
Oh, sure. And we take our time. We routine the work so as you get the pool as soon as possible. But that gunite, you know, it has to set at least 28 days. Then the plaster. I wouldn't fill it until all that had a chance to settle. But Mr. James got awful impatient. Wanted the pool filled 10 days after we gunited. I told him, I said, Mr. James, you don't build a pool like this every day. He said, I know that. And I said, Mr. James, you want this pool right, and I'm going to make it right for you. A few more weeks ain't worth getting impatient about.
Ah, impatient, was he?
Oh, my, you should have heard him. But we stood our ground, you know. Oh, goodness, I wouldn't ruin a $10,000 pool for the sake of 2 weeks.
Hey, what's gunite?
Well, I'll tell you. Gunite's a fine cement. We blow it out of a gun at 60 pounds pressure. See, poured cement ain't as good for a pool. But when you blow the cement into that steel reinforcement we lay down, that really gets in there and sticks. Practically all swimming pools are made of gunite now.
When did you start the pool, Mr.?
Dahl. Daniel T. Dahl. Oh, we started about, May 23rd. We excavated then. Then we laid the steel, the 26th. Then we.
So the night of the 25th of May, there was nothing but a hole here.
Oh, no, nothing but a big hole. We got the gardener to water down so as he wouldn't cave in.
Mr. Dahl, I'd like you to do something for me.
Oh, sure thing.
Drain the pool, will you?
Drain it?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you don't have to ever drain a Daniel T. Dahl pool. You see, the filter system and the automatic skimmer, they take care of all the...
I want you to drain it and get some air drills in here and then tear out the bottom.
What? Tear out the bottom? You crazy? Tear out this pool?
Well, you'll be paid for it and I'll get the authorization.
This beautiful pool? After we did a job like this, what for?
What for? Maybe for nothing, Mr. Dahl.
You
Dig up the pool.
That's right, Mr. James.
Oh, that's the most outrageous suggestion.
I've got a police order.
Well, then you and the police department and the company you work for better be prepared to pay the consequences, Mr. Dollar.
I'll admit this is a pretty expensive hunch, but it's all right. I work for pretty expensive people.
Hope you know what you're doing, Dollar.
What?
I said I hope you know what you're doing.
Well, it's only a hunch, Lieutenant. May 25th, the girl disappeared. Now, May 25th, there was nothing but a big hole here. James knew that the next day, they'd put the steel reinforcement in and then gun-eyed over it. What better place for a body?
Oh, here comes James now.
What?
I said James is coming.
Oh.
What hole is it?
Hello, Dollar. How are things progressing?
Pretty well, Mr. James.
Yeah, I hope you're having a good time. Just like a small boy watching them tear up the street. Only this time it's going to cost you your job. Yes, and your company. A lot of money.
The order comes from the police department, Mr. James.
You have to bring that up.
Don't you think this is all just a little bit childish, darling?
Depends on what we find. If we don't find your wife, it's childish. If we do, it's logic. But rest easy, Mr. James. It won't be long now.
Dollar.
Yeah, Dolph.
I just hit a loose section.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm coming down. Come on, Lieutenant.
Right behind you.
There. Right here, Dollar. You see, it shouldn't be this loose.
Yeah, give me that shovel.
Look, Johnny.
Yeah.
Great place for it.
What is it, Dollar?
Dollar, what is it?
It's a grave, Dollar.
What?
We better get after James. Hey, he's gone.
Huh, let's get up there. There he goes, Lieutenant.
Hey, he's up on the porch.
Come on, let's go.
Stop! As you see, I have a gun.
You don't want to add two more to your score, James?
And why not? Dorothy and Barbara and now you.
Not this time.
No, you
Dollar,
don't.
Look out. Let it go, James.
No, no, you're...
Oh, nice work, Dollar. You all right?
Just fine. But Mr. James isn't going to need a new swimming pool. So Mr. Martin James had fashioned his wife's tomb, a foot of loam and quarter-inch steel mesh, 4 inches of cement, and 8.5 feet of water. A good tomb made to last a lifetime. But unfortunately, it wasn't quite deep enough. Expense account item 9, same as item 1, $73.87, transportation Denver, Colorado to Hartford. Expense account total, $344.59. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, friends, to make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum. There's lots of cooling, real mint flavor in every stick. And chewing Wrigley Spearmint helps keep you feeling fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, wherever you go, keep some healthful, refreshing Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, brought to you by Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role, and is written by Gil Dowd and David Ellis, with music composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Edmund O'Brien can soon be seen starring in Columbia Pictures production 7-Eleven Ocean Drive. Featured in tonight's cast were Parley Bear, Jack Moyles, Howard McNear, Stacey Harris, Gene Spaulding, and Jay Novello. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you've enjoyed tonight's story of Johnny Dollar and that you're enjoying delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum every day. We invite you to join us again next week at this same time when, from Hollywood, Edmund O'Brien returns in another adventure of...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Bob Stevenson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The makers of Camel cigarettes present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective. People smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Make your own Camel 30-day test, the one sensible, thorough cigarette test. You'll enjoy the rich, full flavor of Camel's costly tobaccos. You'll see just how mild a cigarette can be day after day, pack after pack. And you'll know why more people smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Here transcribed is Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency, the ham and mayhem.
It's mayhem.
Not if it ruins a gag. Hi, Helen.
Hi. What are you doing?
Oh, trying to spot a client. I've done everything to get somebody up here. Set traps. Hung out of the window by my toes. Nothing.
Oh, is it that bad, Rick?
Has been for a week. Can I come over tonight and cry on your shoulder?
I'd love it.
Better wear a bathing suit.
Are you going to cry that much?
No, but the bathing suit will sure make me feel a lot better.
You idiot.
Yeah, I can't help it. I try so hard.
Are you really coming over?
If I cry long enough, I'll work up a heck of an appetite.
I'll have Francis fix you a good dinner.
I'll pay you back with the first client I get.
We'll eat out?
No, I'll have Francis fix you dinner.
What time will you be over?
Mr. Diamond?
Rick?
Shh. I think I've spotted one.
Client?
I'm afraid to ask. It might scare him away.
Are you Richard Diamond, the private detective?
Are you interested in hiring him?
I certainly am.
Rick?
We just made a score, baby. I'll see you tonight.
Oh, wonderful. Bye.
Well, come in, sir. Come in. No sense in standing in a draft. Might catch pneumonia before we get around to my fee.
My name is John Alistair.
Well, sit down, Mr. Alistair. Pull up a wallet. A chair.
Thank you.
Now, what can I do for you?
Quite a lot, I hope. 2 days ago, I made arrangements for my own assassination.
Huh?
It's really very simple.
Well, so am I sometimes. Maybe you better be a little bit more specific.
Well, I was bankrupt, in danger of going to prison. I have a family, a wife and 2 children.
And an insurance policy.
That's right. Mm. If I was to be killed, my family would be well taken care of.
You said you were in danger of going to prison. Why?
Well, I'll be perfectly honest. I embezzled money from my firm.
Oh, embezzlement. Well, you can get a lot of years for that.
Yes. So I decided to do away with myself, leaving instructions for my wife to replace the stolen funds. She could live quite comfortably on the rest. I knew suicide would revoke the insurance policy, so I went to the only underworld character I knew, a man named Gimpy. A long time ago, he'd been my bootlegger.
Oh, yeah, I know. He nearly poisoned me once.
I told Gimpy I wanted to hire a man to kill me, a professional assassin. Gimpy said it could be done, and I gave him $200. I told Gimpy to take care of the arrangements and not to tell me anything about the man who was going to kill me. I didn't want to know a thing. How it would be done or when.
Well, what do you want me for?
Well, something has happened. My wife's brother arrived last week from South America, a very wealthy man, and advanced me enough money to pay back the firm and make a fresh start.
Well, then go tell Gimpy to call the gunman off.
Have you read the morning papers, Mr. Diamond?
No.
Here, front page. Gimpy was shot to death last night.
Oh. Well, it's kind of tough then to tell Gimpy to call it off, hmm?
I want you to find whoever Gimpy hired and stop him from killing me.
Find a man with the only clue to his identity lying dead in a morgue? He could be one of 50 professional killers wandering the streets. One of 50 who would make it tough to be found even if you just wanted the time of the day.
Can you find him?
I don't know. I can try.
You must find him before he kills me.
I'll try my best. In the meantime, you stay here and lock yourself in.
In this office?
Yep, right here. Don't even let your wife know where you are.
All right, if you think it's necessary.
Oh, I think it is. And, by the way, I charge $100 a day in expenses. I guess his brother-in-law had given him enough money for a high-priced private detective because he handed me $100 and agreed to lock my door and not answer it for anyone but me. I left the office and headed for the Skid Row Bistro where Gimpy had died on the dirty floor. It was called Black and Red, and the bartender was wearing an apron that looked like he'd been making hash on it.
Yeah, Gimpy got killed here. Right over there, the clean spot near the bar. He bled a little.
You know who gunned him?
What am I answering your questions for?
Because I'm asking them.
That ain't enough. I got a fetish for living.
I'm a private cop.
Well, that's the worst thing you could have said. You better buy a beer or take a walk, huh?
I'll buy. You don't even have to change the $10.
You think I'd tell you something for a lousy 10 fish?
Yeah.
Well, you're wrong. I don't know nothing.
You were in here, weren't you?
Yeah. On my stomach behind the bar.
You saw it start, didn't you?
You want me to tell you as much as I know?
Unless you want to play another tune, we could dance.
$10 for what I know?
You don't think it's worth it, huh?
Nah. But I seen the 10 and it made me greedy.
Okay, here. Live a little.
Thanks. Well, Gimpy was standing over there drinking a beer. These two guys come in and one of them walks up to him.
What did they look like?
Two guys, big guys, hats, coats with a collar stained up, the whole bit. Looked like just what they was. This one guy started arguing with Gimpy about some money.
You hear the conversation?
Yeah, something about wanting all the 200. Well, Gimpy gets a little nasty. He was like that, you know, a nasty little guy. Well, the guy gets tired of arguing and pulls a gun. Gimpy tries to climb the bar, and he must have been halfway over when a guy cut him in two. By then, I was flat on my face waiting for mine. But these two guys took off, and I called the cops. Wait the 10...
You don't remember what either one of the guys looked like?
Nah, I was minding my health.
Okay, thanks.
Hey.
Yeah?
I don't know whether it means nothing, but the guy who killed Gimpy was wearing a small red flower in his buttonhole. A red flower like a rosebud. I remember it. Funny a guy like that should be wearing a pretty flower. What do you want?
Why, Sergeant Otis, you've been taking your ugly pills again.
Can't you ever do anything without the department's help? I thought you were supposed to be a big, smart private detective.
Well, we all make mistakes. I thought you were supposed to be a gorilla.
Oh, you did, huh?
Yeah, but gorillas get bigger.
Oh.
Hello, Walt.
Hello, Rick. What can I do for you?
I got a little problem. Your department handled that killing over in the Black and Red Saloon?
Skid Row?
Yeah.
Yeah, a small-time guy named Gimpy got himself blown up.
Mm-hmm. Any line on the killer?
No, we questioned the bartender who runs the place. He was lying on his face. Couldn't give much of a description. We're checking up on Gimpy's friends and associates.
Well, the killer wore a small red flower in his buttonhole. Maybe a rose.
How do you know?
Bartender told me. Thought maybe you knew about it.
Well, he didn't tell me. What are you interested in Gimpy for?
He contacted the killer. I've got to find the killer, and I don't know who he is.
You think maybe this guy with the flower is your boy?
Well, he might be. Bartender said he was arguing with Gimpy about $200.
Well, no, he didn't tell me that either. Just said they were arguing.
You should have slipped him $10.
What do you have to find him for?
Client.
You got a client who wants you to find a killer?
Yeah, and that's all I'm going to tell you. Now, give me what you got on Gimpy and his friends.
I don't know why I should.
Oh, stop pouting, fatty. I can't tell you anymore. Besides, if I find this killer, you solve the Gimpy killing, don't you?
Well, yeah.
Well, then let's have it.
Okay. Gimpy didn't have many friends. The only sure one we've come up with is a woman named Belle DeCanto. Runs a small dancing school.
Have you talked to her?
Yeah, but she knows less than the bartender. Here's the address.
Walt gave me Belle DeCanto's address, and I went over. It was an old two-story building on the east side with a rickety flight of stairs leading up to the dance studio. Belle DeCanto was sitting at the piano. I stood there smoking a Camel, watched one of her young pupils perform a pretty sloppy set of turns.
All right, Jeannie, that was fine. Over to the bar.
Okay. Hey.
Huh?
Well, somebody.
Oh, what can I do for you?
I want to talk to you, Belle.
$20 for 10 lessons.
I just want to talk.
Why don't you take the lessons, mister? Gives you grace and balance.
I look a little silly in tights, dear.
Go do your exercises, Jeannie.
Okay, but I still think you'd look great in tights, mister. We could do Swan Lake and things.
I bet we could.
Talk him into it, Belle. He's real cute.
What do you want to talk about?
Gimpy.
You a cop?
Private cop.
I entertained the whole Fifth Precinct all morning.
I'm looking for the guy who killed Gimpy.
I told the cops all I know. I don't know who killed Gimpy. Back straight, honey.
Okay.
I can't help you, mister.
You know a man who wears a red flower in his buttonhole?
Huh?
Do you know a man who wears a red...
I'm busy, mister. I got a lesson.
Look, Belle...
I don't know nothing. Now beat it.
Maybe if I bought a course of lessons.
I'm full out. Now get out of here. I told you to keep your back straight.
Okay, okay. I'm keeping it.
Belle...
You going to get out of here, or do I call the law?
Oh, Belle, what you throwing him out for?
You shut up and keep your back straight.
Listen, I'm paying good money around here.
Get out now, mister.
Okay.
What you climbing on me for, huh? So what are you yelling?
You'll get up there and do your bit, or I'll bust this cane over your skull.
You'll do what?
I told your old lady I'd teach you how to dance, and I will if I have to cripple you trying.
You don't yell at me like that.
Bye, you lovely people.
Bye, honey. You don't yell at me. I paid my money. Who do you think you are? Who?
Get up on that bar!
Drop dead!
It was pretty obvious my mention of the man with the red flower had set off Belle DeCanto's charming temper. And it was even more obvious that to Belle, the man with the red flower spelled some kind of trouble. The third and most obvious point was that I wouldn't get anything out of Belle even if I dropped her in a pit full of enraged mice. I started down the steps of the dance studio, heading for the street, and I stopped cold. Something on the third step set off little bells in the space in my head reserved for danger. There, on the third step, was a small red rose, and it hadn't been there when I went in. I stopped and thought about it. Maybe the man I wanted was in the building. I looked around. Only one other door besides the studio, and that led to Belle's apartment above. I went up there and looked around. Nothing. Then I got a pretty scary thought. Maybe the man with the red rose had tailed me, waited around listening at the door. If he'd found me, maybe he'd found my client. I spent the next 20 minutes making myself hard to follow, and when I was satisfied no one was tailing me, went back to my office. Alistair. Mr. Alistair.
Who is it?
Diamond. Open up.
How do I know it's Diamond?
Well, you are being cautious. You gave me a $100 retainer. I told you to lock yourself in my office and not to answer to anybody but me.
Did you find out anything?
Close it and lock it.
Is something wrong?
The man who killed Gimpy was wearing a red flower in his buttonhole. I met an old biddy who runs a dancing school, and when I mentioned the flower, she froze up like a clam in a barrel of glue.
Who is this man with the flower?
I don't know, but before he killed Gimpy, he argued with him about some money. $200.
Well, that's the amount I paid Gimpy to hire the assassin.
Now, I think the man with the flower is probably your killer. And when I left the dance studio, I found this.
A red rose?
Uh-huh. I think maybe he's tailing me.
He knows I came to see you.
I don't know. I think he's found out I'm looking for him. Maybe figures I'm trying to catch him for killing Gimpy. Anyway, you're not the only one on the spot now.
But what'll we do?
If he's looking for me, there's no sense in letting him find you, too. You got to get out of here.
But where?
At an out-of-the-way hotel I know. Manager's a friend of mine.
But what if this killer finds you?
That's a good question. I hustled John Alistair out on the fire escape, and we climbed down to the floor below, just in case our boy with the red rose was waiting outside my office. We climbed into the 7th-floor hall, made our way to the service elevator and down to the alley. A half an hour later, I'd deposited Alistair in room number 11 of the Bunker Hill Hotel in charge of the manager, a one-time safecracker named Herman Klipp. I'd done a lot of favors for Herman, and he assured me Alistair would be safe and that no one would be allowed to see him unless his name was Diamond and he had the bluest eyes in the private detective business. It was 6 o'clock by the time I left the hotel, and I kept to the side streets in case the man with the red rose might be close. It was certainly one way of finding him, letting him find me. But I wanted to be ready for it, and I didn't want to be around my client when it happened. I went back to my apartment on 51st Street.
Hello, chum. I've been waiting for you.
Oh, that's nice. Lonesome?
For a while.
You had that nice big gun to keep you company.
Sure, sure.
Mm. You forgot to wear your rose.
You got the wrong boy, Dime. Drago's busy.
Drago?
Name won't do you any good. I'm going to kill you.
Drago's the boy with the red rose?
Turn on the radio.
You were the guy with him in the bar when he killed Gimpy.
That's right. Turn on the radio.
Okay, okay. Look, tell Drago he doesn't have to kill John Alistair. Alistair says to call it off.
The radio.
Oh, sure. Will you tell him?
See, I tell him. But I don't think he's going to do any good. You see, he knows Alistair talked to you. We know you've been trying to find him. And we don't want anybody who can pin Gimpy's killing on us.
I didn't tell Alistair anything.
Sure. Where you got him hidden out, huh? Eh? We find out. Drago should have knocked off Gimpy like that, but he gets excited. Like running out of the bar before he knocked off the bartender. If we had knocked off the bartender right then, he couldn't have told you nothing.
What about the bartender?
He's in the river. Turn the radio up.
I turned the radio up slowly, my mind working triple time. The guy behind me wanted the music to cover the noise, like a funeral march with a one-gun salute. I heard him get up behind me.
All right, turn around.
It had to be quick. I turned and gave him the radio right in the face. I had twisted his gun right into his stomach. He looked up at me like a kid who was going to bust out crying because somebody had dumped over his blocks. Then he slid down on his face and died without a sound. I put in a fast call to Walt, told him to check his files for a killer named Drago. I told him what had happened and about the bartender who was probably floating on the river. Then I took off for Belle DeCanto's dance studio. The man I just killed had said Drago wasn't going to leave anyone around who might pin the Gimpy killing on him. And Drago had left his red rose on the steps outside of Belle's studio. When I got there, the big dance hall was dark. So I went up another flight to Belle's apartment. Well, here goes. Belle was there all right, and Drago had been there. He hadn't left a rose, but he left a bullet instead. It was somewhere in Belle DeCanto's heart.
Before we continue with Richard Diamond, here is an important question. How mild can a cigarette be? One puff won't tell you.
One sniff won't tell you.
It takes day in, day out smoking to find out how well a cigarette agrees with your throat. Only Camels offer you this day in, day out smoking proof.
In a coast-to-coast test of hundreds of people who smoked only Camels for 30 days, noted throat specialists reported not one single case of throat irritation due to smoking Camels.
Make your own Camel 30-day test, the one sensible, thorough cigarette test. Smoke only Camels for 30 days and let your taste tell you how rich and flavorful Camels are, puff after puff, pack after pack. Let your throat tell you how mild Camels are, how well Camels get along with your throat as a steady smoke.
You'll see why people say, once a Camel smoker, always a Camel smoker.
How mild, how mild, how mild, how mild, how mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see. Smoke Camels and see.
And now back to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Well, here's all the information, Rick. The only man we got on file named Drago is a well-known hood named Tommy Drago. Mm-hmm. 7 arrests, 2 convictions, assault, and armed robbery.
Can you find him all?
Well, I put out an APB. Maybe we'll pick him up.
You find the bartender?
They're dragging the river now. Mm. The guy in your apartment has been identified as Giulio Bassotti, arrested once with Drago. Supposed to work together.
Yeah.
Why did Drago kill Belle DeCanto?
Well, probably thought I told her something.
Now we gotta get this boy. He's killed 3 people in 2 days.
And he wants to add 2 more to his list. Me and my client.
Where is your client?
Oh, he's staked out in the Bunker Hill Hotel. He's safe.
Well, we better pick him up and give him protection.
He doesn't want the police brought in. But you can stake out a couple of men near the hotel in case Drago shows up.
Right.
Look, Walt, if this Drago likes red roses, he must buy them someplace.
Yeah?
Well, have some men check all the flower shops. Have them circulate the description. For the rest of the day and into the evening, the entire precinct turned out to look for Drago. Each man had a photograph, and they toured every flower store in the city, showing the photograph and asking questions. Walt and I even took one section, wore out a lot of pavement and several good inches of shoe leather, trying to find someone who might have been selling the roses to Drago. By 6 o'clock, we were back in the precinct, discouraged, and as Walt said...
Oh, I'm beat.
Yeah.
You want some coffee?
Yeah, might as well.
We took in 12 shops. Here.
Thanks.
Looks like the guy grows his own.
Well, maybe he does.
Swell, I'll put out a general to pick up every window box and flower pot in the city. We're bound to catch him in 10 or 12 years. Yeah, what do you want, Spikehead?
Spikehead?
Just thought it up.
Oh.
Well, did you just want to see if the buzzer works?
No, I got an address on that guy Diamond Shot.
Giulio Bassotti?
Yeah.
Well, do you want us to hold a seance while you give it to us by telepathy?
Oh, 456 River Street, apartment 7. And you sure are getting grouchy.
Walt and I piled into the squad car and took off for 456 River Street. There was a chance that the man who wore the roses might live with his partner, Giulio Bassotti. We found the manager. He led us into the apartment, and after 15 minutes of pretty extensive house-wrecking, both Walt and I came to the same conclusion. Giulio Bassotti lived alone and liked it. We hit the street pretty discouraged.
Well, come on.
Hey, Walt.
What is it?
Look, that old lady down the street.
Well, what about her?
She's selling flowers.
Oh, well, let's go.
Flowers, 20 cents a bunch. Flowers, gentlemen.
Do you have some red roses?
Yes.
Single red roses that I could wear in my lapel?
Yes, 25 cents.
Have you ever seen this man?
What man?
Here.
Yes, Mr. Drago. I sell him a red rose every evening, fresh.
You know where we can find him?
Well, what do you want him for?
Police.
Has Mr. Drago done something?
He's wanted for murder.
Oh, no, how terrible. He seemed like such a nice man, so generous, he dressed so nicely.
He's killed 3 people.
3 people?
Do you know where he lives?
3 people? Yes, he lives in the next block. I don't know the number. I'll have to show you.
Here, I'll take all the flowers you've got. The old flower woman showed us the building, and again we dragged another manager out to let us into Drago's apartment. This time we went in low, ready to shoot if Drago happened to be home. He wasn't. And once again, we tore another place apart.
Find anything?
No, not yet.
Get a load of this closet. Drago really dresses.
Hey, Walt.
Yeah? You find something?
Ah, look at this telephone pad.
What about it?
The writing. Read it.
Bunker Hill.
Bunker Hill Hotel. That's where my client is. Drago's found him. Walt, go check for the men you got staked out and see if they spotted Drago going in. I'll go in and see if my client's all right.
Right.
Herman. Herman. Oh.
Rick.
Over here, Walt. Herman is out cold.
Herman?
Yeah, the manager.
Oh, he looks pretty bad.
Yeah, he's really out.
Drago?
Your men see anybody?
No, but he could have slipped in.
Now, let's get up to my client.
Well, come on.
I'm looking for the key.
What room?
11. Well, it's gone. I had my client locked in. Come on. Second floor. Here it is. Alistair. Alistair, it's Diamond.
Diamond. Diamond, get me out of here. He's been here. He's got a key.
Where is he?
He tried to get in, but I had the chain lock on. Then he tried to break it down. I pushed the furniture in front of the door. Get me out, please.
Just take it easy. We'll try and break it down.
The furniture's still there.
Well, get it out of the way.
Yes, yes. I don't know where he went.
Is there a fire escape?
Fire escape? Yes. Yes. There's an escape right outside my window. Good heavens, Diamond.
Just keep moving the furniture.
But the fire escape...
Just move the furniture. Walt.
Yeah?
You stay here. I'm going out on the fire escape. It figured. If Drago couldn't get past the furniture, he'd get in another way. I ran to the end of the hall and out on the escape. I turned the corner of the building and started for my client's room.
He's on the escape! He's coming down! I can hear him! Get me out! Get me out!
At first, I thought my client had heard just me. But then I saw him climbing down from the floor above, a gun in his hand, the polished barrel shining in the moonlight. As he reached the window, Alistair went crazy.
He's outside the window! No! No, no, please!
I leaned against the building and steadied my arm just as he broke the window.
No, no! No, no!
You killed him. You killed him. You killed him.
Yeah. Funny.
What, Mr. Diamond?
Shot him right through his red rose.
Dick Powell will return in just a minute.
Across the nation, doctors in every branch of medicine have been asked this question.
What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?
Again, the brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to this repeated nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Yes, and Camels are the favorite cigarette of many stars whose throats are their fortune. Rhesus Stevens, Mario Lanza, Martha Tilton are a few of the singing stars who choose Camels for mildness.
How mild, how mild, how mild, how mild, how mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see. Smoke Camels and see.
Here's Dick Powell with a special message.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this week we add a new name to the list of recipients of gift Camels for hospitalized servicemen and veterans. It's the Military Air Transport Service, United States Air Force, which evacuates virtually all overseas wounded servicemen. Camels are also on the way to veterans' hospitals, Lake City, Florida, and Nashville, Tennessee. U.S. Naval Hospital ship Haven. Now, until next week, enjoy Camels. I always do.
Dick Powell can now be seen starring in the RKO film Cry Danger. Tonight's adventure of Richard Diamond was written by Blake Edwards with music by Frank Worth. Our director is Helen Mack. Featured in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Wilms Herbert, and Arthur Q. Bryan.
PA stands for two things, Pipe Appeal and Prince Albert. They go hand in hand, for Prince Albert's Choice Tobacco has a rich flavor and a delightful natural aroma. PA is crimp cut for smooth, even burning, and it's specially treated to ensure against tongue bite. Get Prince Albert, the National Joy Smoke, America's largest selling smoking tobacco.
Listen next week for another exciting transcribed adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell. This is your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the FBI. Follows immediately. Stay tuned. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is the American Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. I'll be back next Wednesday with an episode from Broadway Is My Beat and one from Box 13. In the meantime, you can find past episodes of this show and more old-time radio at relicradio.com. You'll also find links there to our forum, Shoutcast stream, Facebook page, and everything else Relic Radio. Don't forget, if you'd like to help support this and all the shows, if you enjoy what we're doing, click on that red donation information button for more on that. And as always, thank you very much to those who have. And thanks for joining me today. I'll talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.